with entertainment, giveaways, Colorado's largest inflatable igloo, reindeer, Santa, and more. This holiday lighting event is free and open to the public. Public parking on site. For more on this and other events, or to put your event on the calendar, online at kgnu.org.
Support comes from Boulder Ballet and the Boulder Philharmonic, once again presenting the Nutcracker at Mackey Auditorium on the CU Boulder campus. This 30-year tradition continues during the Thanksgiving weekend. Advance tickets available at boulderphil.org/nutcracker.
This is Metro on KGNU Radio, Boulder, Denver, and Fort Collins with your host, Miriam Schiff. Today we're joined by Dr. Kelly Neff as we explore concepts in her upcoming book, Sex Positive, Redefining Our Attitudes to Love. Kelly is a social psychologist, professor, futurist, author, and talk radio personality who shares her unique focus on the intersection of psychology, consciousness, and human sexuality worldwide. Her show, Lucid Planet Radio, has attracted expert guests across the sciences, popular culture, and esoteric traditions, and has been streamed to hundreds of thousands of ears across the globe since it hit the airwaves in 2015. Her latest effort, Sex Positive, Redefining Love, will be out in 2020, and it epitomizes her desire to empower sexual freedom, inspire healing, and improve people's relationships by fusing cutting-edge scientific findings with Eastern philosophies and her own deeply personal insights. She can be reached on Facebook, social media outlets, and Lucid Planet, that's L-U-C-I-D, planet.com. Welcome, Kelly.
Hi, Miriam. It's great to be here.
Thank you. Before we begin, let's define sex positive.
Indeed. So I like to think about the sex positive movement as a social, political, and philosophical movement that promotes and emphasizes sexuality, sexual expression, and emphasizes safe and consensual sex. In other words, it's not about having sex all the time that doesn't make you sex positive, always being horny, always being down. It's about having healthy boundaries and a healthy approach to sexuality.
Let's talk about, before we get to the book, healthy boundaries. Mm. Let's talk about healthy boundaries, because that is really, really one of the most important things in my mind.
Absolutely. Well, I mean, we are living in the time now where finally we are seeing consent and the importance of consent reaching a pinnacle, really for the first time ever for my generation, certainly, that we've seen this dialogue in our mainstream media, in our culture, in college campuses. And those healthy boundaries are different for different people, but they all must emphasize some form of consent.
Give us an example.
Well, I think, for example, one of the things that I've found really interesting is interviewing people for this book is there are a lot of people that women, they look at that, you know, Mr. Darcy kind of mentality, and they want someone to grab a man to grab them and just kiss them. But then other women want a man to say, is it okay if I kiss you? And this is contentious. I've had women that say it turns them off if a guy asks them for consent. But still, it's important to ask for consent. Do you see what I'm saying?
Yes.
Always air. Consent is sexy. Someone asking if you're comfortable with them, that is still sexy.
We're also in this age teaching our children, our babies, that it's okay to say no if grandma or auntie or aunt and uncle want to touch, that they have to ask you, is it okay if I carry you, if I hold you, if I give you a kiss, which is like one of the most healthy things that I can imagine giving our children.
I mean, we were just talking today when I got to the studio and you said, can I hug you? I'm a hugger, after we shook hands. And I said, yes, I'm a hugger too. But again, it's asking permission. And we have to do this because we're sensitive now. We're triggered. All of the stuff that has come through the Me Too movement has left us feeling shook. And in order for us to kind of move forward and redefine the narrative about sex and making sex something that is healthy and empowering and positive, we have to be more respectful of each other and our space and our experiences and our boundaries. And this is something we're going to have to work through. And people who don't like it, like, they're going to have to be ready to do that eventually if they want to move forward. You know, people who think they shouldn't have to ask for consent, you do. And it's okay. Women too, you know, you can grab a guy's butt, but you shouldn't. You should still ask for consent just because he's a man and you're a woman. This is not a gender thing. It doesn't matter if you're non-binary, male, female, gay, straight, whatever. This is a universal truth now when it comes to our respect for our autonomy over our bodies.
What was the catalyst for you writing your book, Sex Positive, Redefining Love?
Thank you for asking. This is something that I have been working on and thinking about for a very long time. I taught human sexuality for almost a decade in Southern California. And one of the things that really shook me was how my students, who were in their, you know, late teens, early 20s, really didn't know a lot about sex. And they had terrible body image. And I know, you know, we're living in Southern California, right, where everyone, there's so much pressure to look a certain way. And my first or second class of the semester was always about body image. And I would have lines of crying students, male, female, and transgender, outside of my class, who were saying how ugly they are and how they feel so unloved and how they feel like they'll never measure up to society's standards of beauty, buying into all of that. And these are like some really, really gorgeous people inside and out, and it broke my heart. And I kind of decided at that point, somebody needs to put all of this information out there in a way that's accessible and empowering for people to know that there's a bunch of BS out there that's telling us we have to look a certain way or act a certain way or adhere to certain stereotypes about our gender. We don't.
Anything in your life, personal, because I know that every book, everything we do in life, radio shows or anything, there's a story behind it.
Yes.
Share with us a sampling of yours.
I have a couple things to say about that. I mean, I can just talk about myself this whole half hour. But first of all, being a Xennial, I was born in the generation between 1977 and 1983. We're like the sub generation. We grew up half of our lives with technology and half with technology. So what that does is it gives you this really interesting insight into the way we used to communicate, to fall in love, to even have sex, compared to the way we do now. Everything is different. And I feel like I've spent exactly half of my life with both. So I have this insight that I can't turn away from how much technology is changing everything. So that's a personal thing for me. The other personal thing is I've been through a lot of sexual body trauma myself, as far as having my uterus taken out in emergency surgery when I was only 30 and almost dying from the experience and coming back to life and trying to make sense of what happened to me and trying to make sense of, you know, am I still as much of a woman, you know, without a uterus and going into menopause in my 30s, you know, understanding all of that and realizing, hell yeah, I am.
Again, feeding into the stereotype, even someone who's sitting in front of me that's writing a book on defining sex positive and redefining love. And when that time came, when the role of reproductive woman was basically taken away to save your life, you still had that fleeting thing of, am I still a woman? Do I still fit the role?
It was a very complex and traumatic time. And shout out to my primary partner out there, Jimmy, because he was there for me. I mean, you have no idea. You know, actually, maybe you do. You know, when you go through these hormonal changes, what it does to you and how difficult it is. But the other thing for me was I had this belief, because no one could explain why this happened to me so early. I had like this uterus filled with tumors, thousands of tumors. They'd never seen anything so bad in 15 years of surgery down in where I had the surgery done. And I was convinced that this was some kind of energetic repression because I was slut shamed in high school and I kind of turned off my sexuality. I thought, okay, well, like a guy who I used to like sex and talk about it when I was like, you know, 18 or so, and people would say, and this is, you know, right around the turn of the 2000, turn of millennium. A different time, even compared to now, with how sexually open people are. And I believed for a while that it was wrong and that I internalized a lot of that guilt and shame about my sexuality and being bisexual and having a, you know, really wanting to stand up for that and not being able to. And I believe in some weird kind of like Louise Hay way, me repressing my sexuality for my entire 20s is what made my uterus sick. And that's another reason why I wrote this book. So nobody else has to go through that same experience, that they know they can love themselves and accept themselves and, you know, fiercely and proudly own who they are sexually in terms of their identities.
And that is not the first time that I have heard a woman state that the issues that I had with my uterus, whether it was fibroids, whether it was cancer, was indeed they felt the internalization of the stigmas that society gave them, that they saw society give other women, the nuances and the uckies of being a woman in this society. When you wrote the book, and I read the second draft. So it's not out yet, people. You have to wait till 2020.
February 11th, 2020, guys. You can pre-order it on Amazon. Shameless plug.
What I was reading was actually about breaking down the patriarchal heteronormative concepts and looking at the rise of non-monogamous relationships, pitfalls of online dating, the gender fluidity, even to include the discussion and the concept of female orgasm and robotic sex partners. Because, but again, looking at all of this and being part of this, non-monogamous relationships, gender fluidity, even talking about female orgasms, we're talking about a stigma on all of this that's placed on society. So let me play devil's advocate for a minute.
Please.
How are we going to teach the generations, like my generation, or before even the baby boomers, where we've lived by the acceptable codes? Of course, a lot of us are questioning those sexual codes a lot now. But how do we allow them to become fearless in their education and above all, tolerant of all of those that are falling under this umbrella?
It's a great question, and you can't force tolerance. You know, tolerance is tolerance. It comes through exposure. It comes through learning the stories of people and realizing we are all flesh and blood human beings at the end of the day. You know, we are living in an exciting time of awakening and change and growth. And it's natural that there will be segments of our society that want to push back against that change and growth and hold on to the old ways. But a lot of that is crumbling because I believe we have in our subconscious this knowledge of our sexuality as this very healing, empowering, beautiful force. And the idea of sacred sexual union as something that can benefit our health and our well-being. I mean, science is even supporting this, that orgasm is great for so many areas of your health. So I think we're realizing that the sexual shame and guilt and repression is actually inherently wrong and damaging to us. And we're connecting back to that ancient knowledge that has existed, you know, for 5,000 years ago, before the whole like heteronormative patriarchy really put its stamp on us that we're now rejecting. There was a different narrative, and maybe we still have that within ourselves collectively, and it just needs like a little bit of stimulation to come out.
Yeah, great use of words.
Thank you.
Let's get into the fact that within all of this, we talked a little bit about it before. Mm-hmm. The sex is intertwined in all of this. How you approach somebody using correct pronouns.
Oh yeah.
Using correct vernacular when you are expressing something, because there's a correctedness. This is not just fly by the seat of your pants. There are boundaries, and again, boundaries that need to be adhered to. Again, consent. Talk to us a little bit about that.
I mean, I think what you're asking is how can you get people who are from generations where they don't understand non-binary or gender fluidity or queer culture even, how can you get them to then respect this culture that they're not part of? And the reality is you can't really force anyone to respect anything. You respect yourself and you step into your truth and you hold your space, and that is how things change. But the reason I wrote this book is because I believe that a lot of the older generations, you know, I'm a millennial and I'm on the older side of the millennials, but Gen X and the boomers, as we now call them, I believe there's a lot of people in these generations who want to understand, who are looking for something to put them on the same page. And that's why I started the book with this topic, because we do need to get on the same page. And the crazy part is the page is always being turned and changing. So when I started teaching this back in 2005, the words that we use for transsexual, transgender, we didn't even really use the term gender fluid. Those terms, transgender, transsexual, I mean, they're really being completely phased out because they're dealing more with the body and the physiology rather than the identity, which gender fluid is about the identity and unpacking this box. So you'll see in the book, I kind of deconstruct every single term in hopes of getting us on the same page. But can we force anyone to use the pronouns we want? No, but we can certainly ask. And if they don't, like, we don't need them in our lives is the way I see it.
And on the other side of that, by using the correct terms, by learning it, by talking about your own small space that you have to come out of to for the acceptance of all of this, leads you into an awareness and with people that you would never meet and who actually fill your life with concepts and with their presence that you would never experience if you weren't open. So that's my pitch, people, for people to breathe in and exhale, and it's going on around you anyway.
It is. And, you know, thank God for the internet. I talk a lot in the book about how it's a destructive force sometimes because it leads to trolling and it leads to stalking and disrespect and all these horrible things that happen when we're ghosting and curving. And, you know, I could go on with the, you know, but it also does create this unbelievable access to community. So when we're talking about trans rights and LGBTQIA+, what we're seeing is so much community being built online and people connecting online and accessibility and normalization of what were fringe stigmatized identities now becoming very normalized identities. And that's the other way that we break a stigma is through normalization and exposure.
And let me take a quick ID. For those of you joining us now, this is Metro on KGNU Community Radio with Miriam Schiff. My guest today is Dr. Kelly Neff, social psychologist, professor, futurist, author of upcoming book, Sex Positive, Redefining Our Attitudes to Love, and a talk radio personality. She can be reached at lucidplanet.com, Facebook, and all other social media outlets, is that correct?
Yes, and I just launched today the website for the book, sexpositivebook.com. You can find out a little bit more about the book and how to order it. And also I'm Dr. Kelly Neff on Instagram, so love to talk to you.
Great, thank you. In the book, you break it down into three segments. The
yes.
First is redefining our social landscape. The second is redefining ourselves, and the final is ultimately redefining our relations. Give us a brief snapshot, because it seems to me that the first part goes into the second part, goes into the third part.
I did it like that for a reason, which is we start when it comes to conditioning about sex, like what we've been talking about. It starts at the macro level, and I'm a social psychologist, so I'm all about the influence of other people on our identities, real, perceived, or imagined, doesn't matter. We are influenced. Any human being, you can't tell me that you're not conditioned. Everyone has been conditioned by our religious institutions, our families, our education system, our media. And so the book begins with breaking this down, which I call the fake news, about sexuality and about gender. And we have to start there because that's something that we all share. And from there, we move into the individual. our own feelings about spirituality and our bodies and orgasm, and also a chapter about healing from this trauma and how we move forward to reclaim more empowered identities. And I believe that in order to do that work, you first have to understand what society has done to you and that you're not a victim of society. Now once you realize it, you can change a lot of these beliefs and these learned behavior patterns. And then from there, once you've done the individual work, can you then begin to pursue the interpersonal romantic relationships and build something that's sex positive. So that's why the final third of the book talks about, finding the right partner, soulmates, relationship fluidity, polyamory, non-monogamy, and then also relationship communication and online dating, and how we finally kind of get to building that sex positive relationship.
So within all of this, there is a self-awareness that comes.
Absolutely.
But yet with that self-awareness, and we were talking a little bit about it before, was... And change and owning who you are and accepting who you are comes the trauma of all the years that you weren't, that you could not accept yourself, that you had to put yourself aside because you knew that the acceptance and the coming out would ostracize you. So we have, along with the stigma, impacted by the stigma, is the depression, is the suicidal ideation, is all of this
fear.
Fear, because if you come out, we know what's going out in the world. We see it all the time. There are programs being cut, health and medical programs for the LGBTQIA community. I can say, how do you overcome it? We know that it's step by step, but that's part of the becoming aware of who you are. So it's like a double-edged sword.
It is. Well, it reminds me of my favorite Carl Jung quote, which I'm probably going to butcher, but it's, he who looks outside dreams, he who looks inside awakens. And ultimately, all growth is hard. And it is traumatic and it pushes us. But what is the alternative? To live in a prison of ignorance of our own design? Once you become aware of this stuff, it's good to go through the pain and the fear and process it. Have community to speak to. You know, I talk in chapter 6 of the book about the process of self-love and finding that self-love and how you accept and move past all of these self-limiting beliefs and learn behavior patterns, you know, and crucially how to practice forgiveness. In psychology and social psych, we know that forgiveness is so good for our physical health even, but we don't do it enough. You know, can you forgive the people who hurt you? Can you forgive a society that lied to you? You can, but it's a process. And then also finding that flow again, you know, redefining that flow in your life. So yeah, it absolutely can be done, and it's tough. And that's part of why I wrote the book, because I've been through it too. And we were talking earlier about, before the show, about how with your generations, it was sex toys was like this thing to come out in the open. And for mine, it was being gay and coming out in the 90s. And I grew up in the life and the story of Matthew Shepard, who was beaten to death for being gay. And now it's being trans, which is amazing to me, because being trans is really ripping apart the very fabric of this like binary dichotomy that we've been told you have to be male or female. You can't be anything else. And we're saying, no, screw that. Actually, I don't want your box at all. So we've been slowly seeing the breakdown of these ideas and the empowerment of people. So for me, this is a positive thing that we are making progress. And I'm optimistic. I have to be. I mean, the book's called Sex Positive, after all.
and it is optimistic. But I want to bring out a note to the listeners that we're not only talking about the impact of all of this on our lives emotionally, but when you wake up and you realize that this who you are has impacted not only emotionally, but employment-wise as well. That there is so much stigma attached to it, yes, that it's still impacted housing. It's still impacting employment. And I think in that area, we, meaning society, needs to look at this and understand that this is a a societal created stigma.
Yes, and it doesn't exist in other cultures. You know, I talked in the book about how across the world there have been people who are transgender, third gender, fourth gender, gender non-binary on every continent and in every culture. But, you know, even this, we don't have a universal federal discrimination protection in America for LGBTQ yet. But there is one that has been proposed, and it's making its way through Congress right now, which, I mean, who could forget AOC and Jonathan Van Ness, like, strutting through the halls of Congress? I saw those images, and I gasped, because finally we're actually seeing the people demanding this. And so if you're one of those people and you believe in this, do your part to get involved, to protest, to call your senators, to, you know, to make posts on the web and let people know, like, we do need federal anti-discrimination protection for LGBTQ. Absolutely.
I'm beginning to think that we need protection for any population that's been marginalized and
yes.
that is a minority.
Yes.
Because everybody is being affected, and my LGBTQ friends are impacted so greatly by all of this. Tell us in the final moments that we have, what final thoughts would you like to leave our listeners with? What do we need to do? What?
I believe that everybody deserves a sex-positive life where they feel empowered and they feel like they can be honest about who they are and stand in their truth. And yes, everyone might not accept it, but it doesn't matter, because if you accept yourself, you stepping into that are actually going to be affecting a lot of other people and inspiring them to do the same. So stay strong out there, all my people.
Thank you. And I want to know that, want you to know that not only is it about the people that are stepping into it, but it's about us who are stepping up with them.
Yes.
Next to them.
Yes.
What's coming up for you?
Oh, my goodness. Conscious Life Expo Los Angeles on the 8th of February. Also, my Tattered Cover Denver, January the 25th, 2020. I'm doing my official book launch here
Thank
in Denver.
You. Thank you so much for joining us again. Kelly can be reached at lucidplanet.com. You've been listening to Metro on KGNU Radio, Boulder, Denver, and Fort Collins. Stay tuned for .org and the Shortwave Report, followed at 4 by the Ralph Nader Radio Hour. Thank you to all our listeners for joining us today. This is your host, Miriam Schiff, reminding you, please be good to each other.
Welcome to .org, KGNU's look at local nonprofits.
Colorado Free University offers community-based adult education in Denver. President Helen Hand explains.
Colorado Free University is a learning network. Folks from the community bring their passion and their expertise to offer to others, and others in the community will come and take classes. So it's the community sharing knowledge and experience with one another in a learning environment.
Can you explain where that idea of community-based education or that learning network came from?
Back in the late 60s and early 70s in the free speech movement, there weren't schools that offered education to the public in an open environment. So the idea was to take away the education monopoly from the established institutions, the universities and colleges, and create opportunities for people to teach what they wanted to teach, whether they had teaching credentials or not, and where people could take what they wanted. So no application, no grades, free to teach, free to learn.
And to be clear, this free university, that refers to really the freedom of ideas and the non-hierarchical nature of the education. It's not free in terms of cost.
Correct. Yes, it is free in terms of access and opportunity, but there is tuition. We certainly try to keep it as affordable as possible.
So who becomes a teacher and how?
Sometimes it's folks who have creative interests and just love to share that with other people. So mostly we're looking for instructors who really love what they're doing, want to share it, are able to create a very practical, hands-on, interactive kind of class, and have good communication skills.
You have a pretty broad range of courses.
We have a full Spanish language program that's excellent. We have computer courses, WordPress, Microsoft applications, Adobe Suite, those kinds of things. And then our core program are all the other classes that fall into the areas of communication, arts and crafts, social media marketing, travel. Some of the new courses include things like growing mushrooms at home, creating beaded jewelry, understanding integrative medicine. Phil Goodstein has taught with us forever and ever. He's a historian who's
a local celebrity.
Yeah, absolutely. But he has offered classes through us called The Seamy Side of Denver and the Cemetery Strolls. And
so not all of your courses are taught on your campus.
Correct. Our one primary location is in Lowry, a little bit east of First Avenue in Quebec. So a lot of our courses are there, but some instructors have their own locations.
To learn more or to check out the course catalog, visit freeu.com. That's free, the letter U, .com. I'm Ray Solomon for KGNU.
For their link and another listen, go to our blog at kgnu.org/dotorg.
And you're listening to KGNU, Boulder, Denver, and Fort Collins. Coming up next is the Shortwave Report. Thanks for listening, folks.
Support comes from the Center for Transformative Movement, reminding you that dance is not just something you do at parties, and providing community-based programs like Dance with a Doc on the last Saturday of the month, where you can discuss the benefits of free-form movement with health professionals. More information can be found at cftmove.org. That's cftmove.org.
This program is supported by you, the KGNU listener member, and by Save Home Heat Company, providing professional service and installation of heating, cooling, plumbing, and electrical systems, proudly serving the Boulder, Denver area for over 35 years. More information at savehomeheat.com.
Welcome to the Shortwave Report. I'm your host and producer, Dan Roberts. This Shortwave Report is a 30-minute review of news and opinion heard on a shortwave radio and the internet in Northern California. Listening to international broadcasts at home is quite easy. You just need a shortwave radio with a schedule of English language broadcast or a computer with an internet connection. To help you with this, I'll announce times, frequencies, and website addresses at the conclusion of each series of stories. At the website for this show, that's www.outfarpress.com, you can listen to the past 5 shortwave reports, find advice for listening to shortwave at home, and find internet links for global news sources. Please check it out and tell a friend. In today's edition, you'll hear reports from Spanish National Radio, Radio Havana Cuba, Russia's Sputnik Radio, and Germany's Radio Deutsche Welle. We'll begin with Radio Exterior de España, or Spanish National Radio. Allison Hughes reports on the second highest water level in the history of Venice and hundreds of bushfires raging in eastern Australia from Brisbane to Sydney. In Bolivia, right-wing politician Jeanine Añez claimed the presidency following a military coup. Recently re-elected President Evo Morales resigned following threats on his life and attacks on his family, supporters, and the indigenous of the country. Evo was granted asylum in Mexico. Spanish National Radio.
In Italy, an exceptional high tide has devastated Venice, with the highest water level since 1966. 80% of the city has been submerged under waters as high as 1.87 meters, causing what the president of the region called unimaginable damage. Infrastructure projects to protect the city from extreme weather events caused by climate change have not been put into effect. The 6 billion euro project known as MOSE, with the creation of 78 gates that can be raised to protect Venice's lagoon during high tides, has all but been abandoned after cost overruns and corruption. One person died yesterday electrocuted in her home due to the flooding. In Australia, firefighters and officials say it could be many, many weeks before the bushfires that have been ripping through various regions of the country can be contained. On Tuesday, more than 300 new fires started in the state of New South Wales, 19 of them classified as emergencies. The fires span from Sydney to Brisbane, some 600 miles. A prolonged drought in Australia's eastern flank has created tinderbox-like conditions. The Bureau of Meteorology says human-caused climate change is also, quote, influencing the frequency and severity of dangerous bushfire conditions by increasing temperatures, sapping moisture from the environment, and causing an earlier and more extreme fire season. The unprecedented wave of bushfires has brought renewed calls for the Conservative government to curb fossil fuels and cut greenhouse gas emissions. However, Australian Prime Minister Scott Morrison and other senior ministers have repeatedly refused to answer questions about climate change during the unfolding catastrophe.